This is Getting Dirty in Your Garden, brought to you by North Carolina State Extension Master Gardener Volunteers. I'm your host, Harold Johnson, and I'm a Master Gardener in Durham County. I was recently introduced to a new and intriguing gardening-related term, foodscaping. As a guest of Bree and David Arthur, I toured the garden surrounding their home in Fuquay Varina. That's gardens with an S, because Bree thoughtfully utilizes most, if not all, of her traditional landscape beds for growing food. There were edible plantings located where the typical homeowner might only plant shrubs, perennial and annual flowers, and ground cover. The areas included the boundaries with neighbors and the foundation border around the house. Her patio was surrounded with shrubs, tomatoes, and dill. The fire pit and surrounding area was planted with blueberries, arugula among landscape plants. The front yard was bisected side to side with landscape plants and an edible fall crop that included corn and sorghum. This front yard planting provided the house a degree of privacy from the street, especially when the corn was grown. I was mesmerized by the vertical garden structure, on wheels no less, located by the house at the end of the driveway. Growing on one side of a 7-foot-tall structure were colorful coleus, while the opposite side was lush with edible plants. Happily, I got to taste delicious carrots from the vertical garden. Each of the garden areas I described contain edible plants or plants yielding fruit, berries, or nuts that Bree then uses to showcase her culinary skills, especially for a favorite activity of hers, entertaining friends. Bree organically manages her gardens using no chemical pesticides. Her thought's simple. Why spray chemicals on food you'll eat? After all, leaves with insect damage don't affect the taste of the food. A benefit of allowing nature's predator insects, and not chemicals, to help control pests is an abundance of pollinators working in the gardens. Bree welcomes pollinators of all shapes and sizes with a diversity of plants. You'll see a variety of butterflies, wasps, bumblebees, and honeybees in the gardens. The concept of foodscaping is an example of thinking outside the box, as in a dedicated raised garden box. Why not utilize space already dedicated to ornamental plantings to grow vegetables, fruits, and nuts? More on the nuts in a minute. If your growing space is limited, as are most of the recently built communities, take advantage of your growing spaces already dedicated to landscaping plants. You'll surprise yourself with how much you can grow when you begin planting along the borders of existing growing beds and among the existing landscape plants. In the spring, Bree plants peanuts, yes, edible peanuts, along the borders of many of the landscape beds. In the fall, pull them up, dry, and roast them for snacking. In the fall, when the peanuts are harvested, she plants garlic in those same areas for a later harvest. Some border areas might have lettuce or yet another edible crop. Don't get the impression that Bree advocates turning all your yard into gardens of food sources. To quote her, turf in moderation is extremely important. Grass completes the scene of my textures, and besides, it also helps keep ticks at bay. Bree delivers her message of biodiversity through foodscaping both locally and nationally. She recounted some of her travels as she shares foodscaping through seminars, the Colonial Williamsburg Garden Symposium, Ralston Blooms, a garden festival for all ages at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum. Think outside the raised box in the Ornamental Breeder magazine. Bree takes an active role in green industry organizations, a regional director for the Association for Garden Communicators, serves on the executive committee for International Plant Propagator Society, and founded Emergent, a group for growing professionals, a forum providing the value of plants, gardening, and all things horticulture as the way of the future. She's also the foodscaping and landscape design correspondent for PBS's Growing a Greener World a TV program providing practical advice on integrating edibles in a traditional landscape. I hope you'll enjoy listening to Bree share her thoughts on adding yard to table to your garden planning. Bree's website will direct you to additional sources of information on foodscaping. It's BrieGrows.com, and that's BrieGrows, BrieGrows.com. Please enjoy and learn more on the concept of foodscaping as you listen to my conversation with Bree Arthur. We just did a tour of the most complete, diverse mixture of landscape and edible foods in Bree's garden. Bree, what's the catchword that you like to use? Not farm to garden, farm to table, but...
yard to table. Foodscaping is the yard to table model.
Yardscaping. That's a term that more people should remember, because it's not many people who don't have either a vertical space, as in a townhome or condo, or some flat yard space. Tell me about some of the edibles that you've planted amongst your more permanent landscape plants.
Well, my favorite trick with growing edibles is to use the edge. I think the edge of the landscape is really powerful. You know, right now the edges are full of mixed borders of peanuts, which of course are a legume. They fix nitrogen, so they're naturally providing nutrients to the plants surrounding them. Peppers and small leaf basil are some favorites for the summer edging. And these things have just replaced the garlic, which I was telling you keeps the voles out of my beds, because I have a lot of in-ground mammals, and so anything that will help keep the voles and moles at bay is always welcome in my garden.
You put garlic in later?
I do. I plant my garlic generally between Halloween and Thanksgiving. And that's really as my beds are transitioning from the warm season to the early cool season. And the garlic grows all winter long. I plant it just along the edge in solid borders. And last year I overcompensated. I planted 360 cloves of garlic because I said, well, we eat garlic every day. And not thinking that that turns into 360 bulbs of garlic, which are then composed of 10 to 15 cloves. So I grew enough garlic for most of Fuquay-Varina. But that shows the power of a bed edge and its square footage and how much can be grown in a space that everyone basically already has.
You have a house situated on about an acre, but part of it is not usable because it's some wetland. Plus you have a house sitting in the middle of your acreage, so you're able to, with the various garden rooms and garden areas, have a lot of edging.
Yes. I think when you're designing a property, particularly a property where you're trying to make it productive, having beds that dissect the space are more efficient. They're also far more accessible. And, you know, we're here in the suburbs, so I don't want to try to be a farmer. I want to have a beautiful landscape that just happens to also provide nourishment. These bed edges are cut in. It's a designed property. It's all on a piece of paper. But these bed edges and the dimensions of the turf space that dissect them are really based off of the mechanics of how to manage the garden. So, you know, everything is passable with a truck and trailer, so getting soil and mulch to the site is easy. I think too often we're a little thoughtless, particularly when we want to grow food, and we till up this giant rectangle and pretend that we're a mini farm, and we actually reduce the amount of space that we can grow on. Yeah, I'm physically gardening the square footage of exactly a quarter acre. You know, we have an acre total, a half acre of a woodland swamp, and then the rest of the sunny space is really between turf and landscape.
Got to go back to your current edging plantings. They're beautiful. They're colorful. The flowers on peanuts are absolutely spectacular. So you didn't give up any ornamental splash. You got it, but with an edible.
Absolutely. And there's no reason that you can't also have ornamentals mixed right in along with those edibles. You know, I love to see Calibrachoa pop up along the base of purple basil. And, you know, I think that by integrating the edibles and ornamentals, you're adding this level of biodiversity that is really required to have a functioning ecosystem. And often food crops aren't biodiverse, so you really need to have them incorporated with plants that represent other genera and multitude of plant families so that you truly embrace biodiversity from the plant level, which ultimately leads to a healthier ecosystem, not only for insects, but, you know, for amphibians and, well, mammals.
I didn't count how many plant families, but you've got 25, 30, 40 different plant families represented.
Basically in every bed.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, now I'm spoiled in that I'm a propagator and I know how to create plants very efficiently and I haven't had to buy all of this. This would be a very expensive landscape if I had to purchase all of the plants in it.
There aren't many homeowners that would garden to this extent. You are a poster child for lots of garden spaces. The average homeowner might have one-tenth of what you have.
Well, and that's really my goal here, is to garden every square inch that's reasonable, but look at it each as a zone or a specific design strategy that somebody else could then apply that one piece to something, you know, like a property border, or a foundation landscape, or the midsection that I use as my grains bed that really just dissects the front yard in half and makes our front yard feel more private because there's a planting between the front porch and the road. I think you have to be a crazy person to want to actually manage this amount of square footage. But the goal of all that I do here is really to show what's possible and then take that and apply it to other people's properties and really to help engage the landscape professionals so that they may be able to someday provide a service that homeowners could access where their landscaper was integrated in producing food on their property, but not in a farmy way, in a pleasing HOA approved landscape. I think everybody wins when we look at this dynamic in an aesthetic but still functioning way, and not just functioning from the aspect that you're growing food, but the land management that's applied because people see the value of organically grown produce. Too often, our commercially managed landscapes are grown with hard chemistries that are frankly not really necessary. If they were to invest in the soil and understand the ecology that exists within a landscape. So by the addition of edibles, people all of a sudden feel this emotional connection to that food and understand, no, I don't want you to put pesticides on it because I'm going to eat it. And that suddenly it makes the whole project, the whole landscape, managed in a more ethical and long-standing fashion.
You have mixed tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, tomatillos. I don't know what else I saw besides
rice.
Wheat and rice. And you actually harvest the wheat and turn it into flour. Last year you had 25 pounds of flour from what wheat you had in your little plantings here and there.
You know, that was 850 square feet of wheat. And every property in this neighborhood has a spare 850 square feet. And what that project has really gotten me focused on is figuring out how to incorporate grains and local carbohydrate sources in a meaningful but stylish and engaging way that ultimately that flour grown in suburban landscapes could go to my local bakeries and they would have a local organic option for flour. That's something that I have never lived in a world where having local carbohydrates was accessible. And I want to change that. I think the local foods movement can't just be about seasonal produce. It has to be about the nitty-gritty, and whether you're eating carbs directly or the animals you eat, one way or another, carbohydrates are part of every human being's consumption. And that needs to be addressed, and we need to raise the bar on having organic and local sources of those everyday staples.
We saw two examples of blueberries planted in your greater yard. Did well in one place, didn't do well in another. Difference is how you amended the soil, providing what acidity is needed by blueberries. Homeowners can use the Cooperative Extension free soil analysis to understand, can I grow blueberries here? Or if I want to, what do I need to do to be able to grow blueberries? So you are able to show people
the good and the bad.
Here's how it really works.
You know, I keep feeling bad that I never transplant that one hedge of pink lemonade, which is a wonderful, wonderful blueberry, but it's underperformed because of that rich organic compost that you saw arugula does so well in that space. And you know, it's generally a very fruitful part of my garden, except for the blueberries. And, you know, planting in a trough of pine bark really is the solution. And a lot of times people want to plant blueberries along foundations. And one of the challenges with that is the lime that's leached from your mortar. And though I still am weary of planting blueberries adjacent to a sidewalk or a foundation, I think with the forethought of you know, digging a large trench and really filling it with ground pine bark, that could at least help you get a good start for getting blueberries established in more alkaline conditions. You know, these are the things, these are the experiments that people need to see so that it clicks, so that it makes sense.
You didn't suddenly wake up one morning and know everything you needed to know about sustainable food farming on your property. How did you come about it?
You know, this is the thing that makes gardening so fantastic and wonderful and the best pastime that you could ever have, is that every day you learn because you're engaging in the space and you're paying attention. It's your job as a gardener to look and see and hear and feel what the garden is doing. And that's such an incredible extension of life and purpose. I mean, I can't imagine existing on this planet without being able to manage a piece of earth in a creative way. And I think that's what we for too long haven't been talking about. Gardening isn't no maintenance. It's fabulous maintenance. It's the most wonderful allocation of your time. It's creative and physical, and you get instant gratification, and you get to wait and see results long term. And it embodies everything that is wonderful about being alive. Everyone needs to get that. It's such the most fantastic addiction that we could be able to be blessed with. And, you know, that's the thing. This is a lifestyle. It's what makes being alive and enjoying the everyday possible, because the little moments can be appreciated when you're a gardener.
As we walked around, I saw butterflies. I saw the chrysalis stage, and I saw the caterpillar stage. Now, you must not be spraying lots of pesticides.
Zero pesticides. You know, for a long time in my career, I held a pesticide applicator's license because it was necessary working as a propagator and grower at a nursery. And I am truly offended that that is our standard, because what we're doing is copping out of understanding how to biologically get around the challenges. And spraying pesticides is simply not acknowledging ecology. And you can grow very successfully allowing insects to be a part of your system. And to me, human beings have way too much in common biologically with insects than we want to acknowledge. And there are a lot of pesticides in the market that haven't been out long enough for us to truly understand the long-term implications. And I'm simply not willing to subject myself to the potential of future illnesses because the biochem companies need to survive in a tough economy. I think there's an opportunity for all of these industries to acknowledge that suppressing nature is not the solution for living on this planet. And I hope to see that happen in my lifetime. But it's shameful that the nursery industry, in really just 60 years' time, has become so synthetically driven and dependent that they feel it's impossible to grow any other way. And this is an example that it is not impossible.
As we walked around, I saw some leaves that showed insect damage. But the fruits, the vegetables, everyone was still producing happily. So a little bit of ugliness or whatever.
Exactly. I think maybe we need to all switch our filters. My husband laughs because I wear Maui Jims, the sunglasses, and the world is more beautiful looking through those sunglasses. But I think of that as an analogy to how we determine beauty in a garden setting. And yeah, my eggplants have flea beetle damage from the dry, god-awful hot summer that we've just kind of broken through. But that has no impact whatsoever on the plant's ability to photosynthesize and set fruit. And ultimately, I think those leaves tell a story and are kind of lacy and beautiful if you were to look at it as not being perfect. Maybe we need to redefine perfection in the landscape and understand that maybe it's perfection because those flea beetles come and that feeds, you know, a whole slew of other insects that make my garden function. And that all of these things have a place. And get over yourself.
As we walked around, I noticed that the edge plantings themselves had so many colors of flowers that could be photographed. And I'm thinking too that if you did a really close up of one of the lacy leaf and you didn't tell someone what it was, they would go, "Isn't that the most wonderful lace pattern?
It's a piece of art."
But then they step back and go, "But that's a leaf. It's being eaten."
You know, maybe that is a great photo book to suggest. Turn your filter and do close-ups of leaves and then what the plant itself looks like. That's brilliant.
The first slide, here's the leaf.
Exactly.
And what is it? What do you all think? Pretty soon they'll catch on that you're going to show them.
Eaten leaves and art in the garden. Insect art. Well, you know, I have a minor in entomology. And I feel so lucky that I was introduced to that. Because I think that a lot of the university programs have shifted since I was in college 15 years ago. But having entomology as part of my awareness has always driven how I wanted to garden because I had some professors that loved insects so much more than humanity, and rightfully so. Our species wouldn't exist if it weren't for insects on this planet. And, you know, maybe in some ways people need to chant that in the mornings before they call the Orkin man and create a dead system in the space that they interact in. You know, insects to me are really what create that ultimate sense of place. You know, you go to different regions and you have different insects. And that's just as remarkable as different mighty trees. And
insects were here before any of us.
And they'll probably outlive us, too.
And that's not just a cockroach.
That's right.
After listening to my conversation with Bree Arthur, I hope you're intrigued by the foodscaping concept and begin planting your mixed gardening beds of ornamental and edible plants. More of my conversation with Bree will be posted soon, so please return for more on Yard to Table. You've been listening to Getting Dirty in Your Garden, brought to you by North Carolina State Extension Master Gardener Volunteers. You may find this and future episodes on our website, gettingdirtyinyourgarden.org. Until next time, why not go out and get dirty in your garden?